Thank you for joining us for Sermons on Demand from Friendship Grace Brethren Church. We provide these videos as a way to share the pulpit messages and teachings offered at Friendship Grace Brethren Church. If you find these videos a helpful resource, please drop us a note at info@friendshipgracebrethren.com. Now open your Bibles and get ready to dig into the Word of God.
You may be seated. It is hard to get through that song without being emotional. I had to stop several times from singing because I get choked up in that song. Continuing our study of the book of Acts, beginning of the journey. The title of my message this morning is Confidence and Trust. Confidence and Trust. We continue to work our way through the 25th chapter of the book of Acts. Last week we saw the Apostle Paul before Festus in Caesarea. Remember, Felix had been replaced, and Paul remained in custody for more than 2 years. Paul then appealed to Caesar, and Festus decided to send him to Rome. This is where we pick up the account in Acts chapter 25, verse 13. Paul will be sent to Rome, but not before another trial here in Caesarea. So we have to work through that first. Acts chapter 25, verse 13 through 15. Now when some days had passed, Agrippa, the king, and Bernice arrived at Caesarea and greeted Festus. And as they stayed there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There is a man left prisoner by Felix. And when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews laid out their case against him, asking for a sentence of condemnation against him." Excuse me. Paul had appealed to Caesar, and Festus had agreed to send him. There's all sorts of legal things that kick in when that begins to happen. As soon as he appealed to Caesar, it begins to set the timetable that only Caesar can answer the appeal now. There's ways that those governors could have gotten out of that, but it was difficult and often challenging for them. So Paul was not immediately sent to Rome, however, as soon as he made the appeal. He remained in Caesarea for a while. We don't know the length of time. We have some guesses, but we don't have good data to tell us exactly how long Paul was there. Dr. Luke doesn't give us the specifics. And as I was reading this, you know, I frequently say, Dr. Luke was an excellent historian. He was very meticulous in what he tells us and stuff. For whatever reason, he doesn't tell us about this. It's not an important factoid for us to know how long he remains there in custody. It may have been as long as a few months, but doesn't appear to have been years. It appears to be longer than a few days or weeks, but not longer than a few months, it appears. During that time, King Herod Agrippa II, the son of Agrippa I, and his sister Bernice comes to Caesarea. Agrippa II and Bernice, his sister, had an incestuous relationship. Bernice had relationships with all sorts of other important people. Agrippa was the last of the Herod dynasty. He was considered a king, what they call a client king. He didn't really rule sovereignly. He was really just an appointed regional guy. And he was the king that had the smallest territory. He just had a couple of few cities around the Galilee region. He didn't rule anything in Judea, just up in the Galilee. But what makes him different is he was the one that Rome appointed to appoint the high priest. So he got to control a lot of things because he controlled the high priest. Like many women of the ruling class, Bernice had many relationships with powerful men in the region. She would go on to have a relationship with General Titus when he came to the area. Titus is the general that sacked Jerusalem in 70 AD. But as soon as Titus had won that and had headed back to Rome and was slated to become the emperor, he dropped her like a hot potato. She was used to that. That happened to her a bunch of times. When Agrippa arrived in Caesarea, he was greeted by Festus, and Agrippa stayed for a few days hanging out with Festus. During this time, Festus told Agrippa about he gives him an earful. Listen, I've got this guy. You're kind of a Jew, sort of a Jew. That's what he would say to him. So help me out understanding what's going on here. I got this guy that was left to me by Felix, who's a Jew, who I can't find anything wrong with. I can't find that he did anything wrong, but the Jews want him dead. But as far as I can tell, it's all about Jewish stuff. You're a Jew, Agrippa, tell me, what do I do? Where do I go? Festus acknowledged that he didn't really know how to handle this. He didn't know how to solve this problem. He was caught between a rock and a hard place. Romans had placed various people in positions of authority to make these decisions, but he was not able to properly make the decision. I answered them that it was not the custom of the Romans to give up anyone before the accused met the accusers face to face and had an opportunity to make his defense concerning the charge laid against him. So when they came together here, I made no delay, but on the next day took my seat on the tribunal and ordered the man to be brought. So Festus continues his accounting to Agrippa. There's no sense that Festus reported to Agrippa, and there's no sense that Agrippa reported to Festus. They were kind of like parallel in their little fiefdoms. They did different things, but they had no authority over each other. But Festus is trying to get Agrippa to understand what's going on, or at least to tell him what's going on. Festus says that he reiterated to the Jewish leadership that Roman custom was to have the accused hear directly from the accusers. That's not something that's new in our system of jurisprudence. That's a longstanding tradition in the Greco-Roman world. The Roman Empire was very heavily favoring the Roman citizen and their rights. So the Jewish leaders came up to Caesarea the second time to make their accusations concerning Paul. The first time they came before Felix, and the second time they came before Festus. When the accusers stood up, they brought no charge in his case of such evils as I supposed. Rather, they had certain points of dispute with him about their own religion and about certain Jesus who was dead, but whom Paul asserted to be alive. Being at a loss how to investigate these questions, I asked whether he wanted to go to Jerusalem to be tried there regarding them. But when Paul appealed to be kept in custody for the decision of the emperor, I ordered him to be held until I could send him to Caesar. Festus admitted that he didn't understand. He didn't hear anything in the charges that would lead him to say, yeah, I should execute this guy. He didn't see any reason for him to be in custody at all. But the Jewish leaders wanted it, and so he continued to practice that. He understood the charges were focused on minor disputes about Judaism, principally the resurrection. That's not a Roman law. That's a Jewish thing. Festus he's troubled. He doesn't know how to deal with this. Then Festus tells Agrippa that when he recognized this was all about Jewish religious teaching, he asked if Paul wanted to go to Jerusalem to be tried. Here's your first question this morning. What was Festus doing in telling Agrippa all of this?
Asking to work for somebody
Passing the buck, okay, to somebody else. Yeah, he's trying to. I think what Linda said is really close to being accurate. He's passing the buck because he doesn't know how to solve this problem. He doesn't understand the Jewish religious system. Herod grew up in that. Agrippa grew up in that, so he understands it. I mean, he perverted it, but he understands it. And he's trying to find a way that he can get out of this. Think about it. If Paul is sent to Rome without good charges, he doesn't look that very good in front of the emperor. And the emperor had the ability to kill you, especially the emperor at this time, Nero. He was a nutball. And so he was afraid for his own life. How do I get out of this? How do I send this guy? I got to keep the Jews happy. How do I send him to Rome with charges that are valid? What do I do? I'm stuck. And so he was trying to, in a sense, at least get somebody to commiserate with him, if not to pass the buck to. If Paul gets to Rome and the emperor determines that Paul never should have been sent, then Festus has trouble. If Paul doesn't go to Rome, the Jews complain to Rome, and Festus has trouble. There's no scenario that Festus can think of that there's not going to be trouble for him. This is as bad as it gets for Festus. I think that Festus wanted this situation to go away. And if he could dump it on Agrippa, I mean, he didn't really care about Agrippa anyway. Agrippa was just a local annoyance. He ruled a couple of small cities, that's it. But it's not over yet. And Agrippa said to Festus, "I'd like to hear this man myself tomorrow." Said he, "You will hear him." So Agrippa goes, "Listen, I want to know more." So Festus says, "Okay, tomorrow you'll get to hear him." So the next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp. And they entered the audience hall with the military tribunes and prominent men of the city. Then at the command of Festus, Paul was brought in. I love the picture of this. I love what Agrippa is saying about himself. This is hail to the chief when you walk into a room. This is all the dignitaries of the community in the room standing up and going, "Oh, how great you are." Of course, Agrippa required that. He was all about himself. He was all about looking at himself. And so it was the next day that this happened because they had to get all of this set up. They had to get all of his decorations up, all of his ornamentation, all of the people ready there to play hail to the chief when he walks in. This small-time king comes into the hearing hall with all sorts of pomp and circumstance so everybody knows who he is. This is all about Agrippa getting the audience that he needed for his own ego. All of the Roman dignitaries in town were made to be there, so this looked like a really big situation. Eventually, Festus orders Paul to be brought into the hearing hall. And Festus said, "King Agrippa and all who are present with us, you see this man whom the whole Jewish people petitioned me, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting that he ought not to live any longer. But I found that he had done nothing deserving of death, and as soon as he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to go ahead and send him." Festus plays things up a little bit for Agrippa, who was playing things up a lot. He addresses Agrippa and then all the Roman dignitaries. Can't you see this? This is the meeting of the United Nations General Assembly, right, where they address all the dignitaries that they can't stand. They don't ever want to be in the same room as. But it says, O King Agrippa, O Roman dignitaries that are here, here's what's going on. He presents Paul to them, telling them that the whole Jewish people petitioned him about Paul, both in Jerusalem and in Caesarea. He then says they demanded that Paul be executed. You think he embellished just a little bit, trying to make this situation better than it was? Festus then goes on to say that he had determined that Paul had done nothing worthy of death, and since he appealed to Caesar, Festus decided to send him to Rome. And I have nothing definite to write to my Lord about him. Therefore, I have brought him before you, and especially before you all, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after we have examined him, I may have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable in sending a prisoner not to include the charges against him. Well, that's pretty smart. It seems unreasonable to send someone to Rome without charges. Festus tells Agrippa and the others gathered together that he didn't know what to tell Rome concerning Paul. So here's the game plan, Festus says. Look, let's interrogate him again. Let's have another trial, and then let's put our heads together, and we can write charges against him. I've been in the courtroom a lot. I hope never has the judge had his mind made up before the trial. But that's what's going on here. We're going to send him to Rome. We just got to figure out how to write the charges so we look good and he looks bad. That's what was happening. Here's your second question. What's the real problem Festus had in sending Paul to Rome? Yeah, Festus was in a trick bag for sure if he didn't follow the right procedures. What else? Mm-hmm. Well, he had several, right. But they were all kangaroo courts, right?
Right. And there's nothing in Roman law that Paul has done.
Correct.
It's Jewish law, so.
Yeah, Rome doesn't have any jurisdiction on this fight at all.
So they have to make something up so that they don't look stupid and their heads don't roll.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. The real issue is that Paul had been tried several times and found not guilty every time. The way we practice law here in the United States, if you're found not guilty, you can't be tried for that charge again in that jurisdiction. Now, we get around that by having a state court and then having a federal court, and if we didn't get you in the state court, we'll try you in the federal court. I mean, double jeopardy is not absolute, but this was double, triple, quadruple jeopardy. They can't find anything that he did wrong against their laws, only Jewish principle. That's it. But now it was becoming really clear. If Paul was innocent, why was he still being held? Here is a Roman citizen being held after tried several times and found innocent, or at least not guilty. As a Roman citizen who had his rights so violated, Festus was really in the trick bag, and he knew it. I've got to keep peace with the Jews, so I've got to send him to Rome, but he's been tried several times and he's innocent. What do I do? So Festus says to Agrippa after this. He says, so do you mind helping me get to a place where I can keep the peace with the Jews, but I can also keep my head and keep my job? Festus was fearful about what was going on in his world. Paul had invoked ad Caesarum provoco. That's an appeal to Caesar. That's the Latin for an appeal to Caesar. It was a legal principle in the Roman Empire that protected Roman citizens from improper and harsh treatment often found out in the empire. It was a long-standing right and principle that everyone in the Roman Empire took very seriously. It was a right that was almost absolute. You don't get punished without being proven guilty. It was very rare that a Roman citizen would not be granted the appeal to Caesar. Very rare. Once you appealed to Caesar, things began to happen. Caesar had become the final court of appeals. And his word was final. There was no appeal after Caesar. Some New Testament scholars argue that Paul, when he said those words, he removed from the equation Felix, Festus, Agrippa, and anyone else until he could appear before the emperor. I don't think that's quite accurate. He was appealing to Nero, and no one could render a verdict now since he appealed to Caesar. I think there were ways that they could have gotten out of this, that Paul could have gotten out of this. Some other New Testament scholars hold that Paul failed to trust God by appealing to Caesar. I read with great interest a scholar who said Paul was at a low point in his life when he had to appeal to the civil authorities. So here's a question for you. Was Paul's appeal to Caesar a failure to trust God? Why or why not?
Mm-hmm. And I think Paul appealing to kind of the legal system was responsible, especially given that the Jews wanted to murder him, and had he just gone back to Jerusalem, he more than likely would have been murdered.
Right.
And then also, God, I think, had prophesied that he was to bear witness to him in Rome.
Right. You're reading my notes, aren't you? It wasn't a failure to trust God at all. In fact, I see it exactly the opposite. It demonstrates a complete faith in God. Ananias was told by the resurrected Jesus, listen, this guy that you think is going to kill you, he's going to be my witness in front of Gentiles and kings and in front of Israel. He's going to get to do that, and Paul was told that, and Paul is now looking at, I'm going to get to Rome. I trust you, God. I don't know what's going on here, but I know I'm getting to Rome. Paul knew God had great plans for him and that those plans were not yet complete. He'd get to Rome, and he'd have the opportunity to influence kings and the royal family of Rome. We know that happened. Appealing to Caesar demonstrates that Paul knew what God had promised and he was confident in it all happening as God said it would. Felix, Festus, Agrippa demonstrated that Paul had violated no Roman law. Paul recognized that he was a political prisoner. And his only recourse for him to act was to appeal to Caesar. But that in no way prevents God from doing something miraculous in removing Paul from the situation. Remember, Paul had experience with that. Locked in the inner part of a jail in Philippi. What happens? The door is open and he walks out to the street. It's not like God couldn't do that. But he appealed to Caesar, even though he knew God still could do that. Paul's appeal to Caesar was appropriate and was exactly the appeal process was created for. Why the appeal process was created in the first place. He knew that, and God knew that. This was all part of God's plan. Paul never lost faith in God and took things into his own hands. That never happened. Paul always trusted God for getting to where he needed to be. He was trusting God to do what he had promised he would do, while at the same time doing what he could do. We need to remember that, as Steve said, governments are there by God's design. God places the people in power. The Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to the lowliest of them, we read in Daniel. I mean, God's proven that lately, right? In our world. Paul wrote Romans 13, 1 through 4. I had a nice plaque on the wall in my office at the sheriff's office. And I don't know how many conversations I had about Jesus because people would come in and ask the question, well, how is that possible? How can you be a minister for God by carrying the sword? Because God's in control. Paul was confident in God and knew that God would care for him, even when he was being charged with things he didn't do, crimes that he didn't commit, but still being held in custody. Paul will make another defense before Agrippa, beginning in chapter 26. But until we get to that, the Lord willing, next week, I'd like for you to think about this. Do you have confidence in God to care for you and provide for you no matter what your circumstances? Do your circumstances keep you from following and trusting God? Does the nutball in the White House or the nutballs that run our Congress or the people that are saying things out on the airways of the media, do they get you down so that you don't trust God? Well, stop listening to them if they do. Or do your circumstances determine how you respond to what level of faith you have in God? Do you get so depressed by what's going on that you can't follow Jesus anymore? I mean, the Apostle Paul is the guy that is the poster boy for being where he shouldn't be. This wasn't the first time he was arrested. This wasn't the first time he was arrested for no crimes. I love how Paul wrote about this very subject. We read it earlier in 2 Corinthians. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me." Think about the man that wrote that. He's in prison for a crime that he didn't commit. He's been tried multiple times and found innocent, and he's still in prison. But my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Paul recognized he was dependent on God, even when in custody for crimes he didn't commit. He recognized he was weak but made strong through God's power. Each of us are in the very same situation every day. You may not be in jail for crimes you didn't commit, but you live in a world that is getting more hostile to followers of Jesus all the time. You can't say much anymore without being labeled a bigot or intolerant. That and all the things that are going on in our world today are not sufficient to overcome God's care and protection of you. All the things that are happening in our world today. Chuck was telling us just a little bit ago of another shooting. I don't know how many that is in the last few weeks, but none of that overcomes His grace. It's sufficient for us, and we are made powerful in our weakness. Those things don't overcome God's power to protect you and care for you. Even if you were in that classroom when that nutball came in and started shooting, that wouldn't supersede God's care and protection for you. Absent from the body is present with the Lord. How glorious would that be? Paul serves as a great role model for us to emulate. He never let his circumstances dictate his faith. He always trusted God to protect him and care for him. We've got to do the same thing. Trust God despite what's going on in the world. God is sovereign. And none of the wackadoodle stuff going on in the world today is a surprise to God or more powerful than God. Nothing that you hear on the news is more powerful than God. Nothing that you feel in your heart is more powerful than God. Your own emotions, your own fears, your own prejudices are not more powerful than God. God is far greater and more powerful than any issue you have. And just looking around the room, I think we all have some issues. God is able. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Whose weakness? Your weakness, my weakness. Trust Him. Follow God's example. Follow Paul's example. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. Father, thank you for the reality of who you are. Thank you for all that you do for us. Father, we love you, and we want to serve you. We want to be obedient to you. We want to trust you. Lord, as my brother Chuck often says, it's not his theology that's struggling, it's his psychology. And Father, I get that. I get that. I think you do as well. And so today I ask for your extra measure of grace on us. Allow us to feel your loving arms around us. Let us feel your power welling up in us. Let us trust you. Let us obey you. Let us just remember to always love you. Thank you for loving us, in Jesus' name.
Thank you for watching or listening to this teaching on demand from Friendship Grace Brethren Church. Please consider sending us an email at info@friendshipgracebrethren.com to let us know how this teaching may have helped you. Please also consider joining us in person at Friendship Grace Brethren Church, located at 10251 Metro Parkway, Suite 116, Fort Myers, Florida, just south of the intersection of Metro and Colonial Boulevard. Sunday school begins at 9 and worship service at 10 a.m. We look forward to seeing you in person at Friendship Grace Brethren Church.